from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. 9 months have passed since the United States' deadliest mass shooting took place at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. Dan Gross, president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, worries that despite such high-profile incidents, not enough is being done at the congressional level to prevent gun deaths. We're going to talk with him this segment about the recent overturning of gun restrictions on the mentally ill, the prospects for gun control under President Trump, and the Brady Campaign's approach to reducing gun deaths. Welcome, Dan Gross.
Good to be here, Michael.
Good to have you. And let's talk first about the Brady Campaign's approach, because we're talking about a lot of emphasis on background checks, which most Americans agree with and are approval of, but also putting an emphasis on what you call the bad apple gun sellers, who account for a lot of guns being sold and being used illegally and being used in crimes. Let's talk first about background checks. I mean, even after the terrible tragedy that occurred with those children up in New England, there was still resistance because of the NRA. I mean, we've got Congress to deal with here. We've got people who are in talking about Sandy Hook, right? I'm talking about the fact that Congress didn't move an inch. Everybody thought that that tragedy particularly would make a difference about background checks. It didn't.
Yeah. I mean, the good news and the bad news is that there is a staggering disconnect between what the American public wants, what's in our best interest of our safety, and what our elected leaders are doing about it. It's bad news. It's actually tragic news because we have – it's not just the mass shootings, the high-profile shootings that we hear about all too often, but it's the 90 gun deaths that happen every single day in this country. And we have a Congress that is so in the pocket of the corporate gun lobby that they're not acting. It's good news, that disconnect, because it means that the overwhelming majority of Americans are supportive of our agenda. 93% of the American public supports expanding effective life-saving Brady background checks.
I've seen polls that high, but I've also seen them lower, around 80%, but still a majority
still,
of Americans.
Overwhelming majority. I mean, 74% of NRA members support. This is not controversial anywhere except in the halls of Congress. It is our job, as it relates to policy on this issue, to close that disconnect, to make the voice of the American public heard. And the good news is we're making that happen like never before. You know, after the terrible tragedy in Orlando, the Pulse nightclub shooting, we put 150,000 calls into Congress in 24 hours. Listen, Congress is never the first and almost always the last to wake up and realize it's on the wrong side of history. And when it does, it's because the American public grabs them and shakes them. And I have no doubt that's what we're in the process of doing. We just need to continue to make our voice heard and ultimately show Congress, like is the case on many issues, but especially on this issue, that they work for us and that we're on to them. They've been able to operate kind of under the cover of night for too long with backroom political deals where they do the bidding of an industry that puts profits ahead of the lives of the American people.
Well, you obviously have to put a lot of pressure on Congress, and you're also trying to put pressure to some extent on the ATF, on really those gun owners that you call the bad apple gun owners who are selling guns about 5% by your estimates?
Yeah, that's an important thing to realize here and the kind of transition we're making in this conversation. Policy is a very important part of the solution, and background checks are the central part of that. Keep guns – the bottom line with everything we're going to talk about here today from my perspective is keeping guns out of the hands of the people that we all agree shouldn't have them. Brady background checks have proven to be the most effective way to do that, blocking 3 million sales to convicted violent criminals, domestic abusers, people who are dangerously mentally ill. We need to fight every day not only to expand Brady background checks, but to prevent what's happening, which is the agenda of the Trump administration very clearly in this Congress to piece by piece dismantle that effective background check system, what you referred to in terms of people who have been deemed mentally ill by the Social Security Administration. There's a new bill that's been introduced today in the House, people who have been deemed by the Veterans Affairs to be mentally incompetent. Their words, not mine. They want to have 174,000 of those names removed from this effective background check system.
Could you maybe codify for us what you mean? I mean, a lot of people don't know what the Brady background check actually in concrete terms includes.
Yeah, I'd be thrilled to. So the Brady bill that became the Brady – what's known as the Brady law
– because of Jim Brady, who was actually shot by John Hinckley in the attempted assassination of Ronald
Reagan. Yeah. Correct. And this organization led by Jim and his amazing wife, Sarah, who have both recently passed, we passed the Brady Law, what's known as the Brady Law, the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act, in 1993. In 1994, that resulted in the implementation of a national background check system that we call now called the NICS system, where the names of prohibited purchasers go in. So it's convicted felons, domestic abusers, people who have been adjudicated dangerously mentally ill, and fugitives. Over those 20-plus years, 3 million sales have been blocked to those people at federally licensed firearm dealers. Tremendously affected. Countless lives have been saved because of Jim and Sarah Brady and this organization. Problem is, the world has changed a lot since 1994. Now, gun shows have become big commercial business, and the internet has become a thing. And in most states, online and at gun shows, you don't need to pass the same background check that you would need to pass if you walked into a federally licensed firearm dealer who was obeying the law.
Which you still have 32,000 people dying each year of gun violence.
Right, right. One of the big parts of the problem is that massive hole in our background check system, which is why our political priority, our policy priority, is to expand those Brady background checks to all gun sales in our country so that you don't have a system. Right now, the analogy is there's a system to buy guns in our country that's the equivalent of if you try to get onto an airplane in an airport, there are two lines for security, one with an effective metal detector and that can detect danger, and one with no security whatsoever. And you can self-select in most states which of those lines you want to go through.
Well, sorry, even the ones with a metal detector have proven to be, shall we say, not as efficacious as people would like. And, you know, there have been all these people getting through with weapons, not necessarily TSA doing what it is supposed to do or what it's allegedly paid to do. But you're talking also about, you know, the pressure on these bad apple gun dealers. And you say, you know, name them and shame them. And to some extent, you got to find them first.
So this is the there are two other important things that this organization does that very hearteningly has nothing to do with who's in Congress and who's in the White House, where we can have an impact on our bottom line, which is preventing people from getting shot and killed in this country. The first one is to go after what we call these bad apple gun dealers. Here's the deal with that, Michael. 5% of gun dealers in our country are responsible for selling 90% of the guns that are recovered in crimes.
Does this include internet?
No, 5% of the—
We're just talking about bricks and mortar gun dealers.
Yeah, and people who are licensed as gun— They're not all brick and mortar, but people who are licensed gun dealers. It's traced back to— they're traced to 90% of gun crimes in this country, just 5%. 1% is responsible for more than half of all crime guns in this country. They know what they're doing. This is not an unfortunate coincidence. You have gun dealers like Chuck's Gun Shop and Pistol Range, for example, right on the outskirts of Chicago, in a little town called Riverdale, Illinois. You can walk there from the south side of Chicago, that has sold 1,500 crime guns that have been recovered on the streets of Chicago in 4 years. So if you tell me there were 12 terrible, tragic shootings on the streets of Chicago over the last week, I can tell you with a reasonable degree of certainty the 5 or 6 gun dealers that most of those guns came from. So we need to go after them, and we need to put them out of the business of selling guns to criminals. They're selling them through what we call straw purchasers, where two people will walk in, usually a young man and a young lady. The young man will pick out 10 handguns, and the young lady will, with a wink to Chuck's or whatever other gun shop, will pass the background check. They're selling guns off the books and then reporting them as lost or stolen. So as you were alluding to, part of it is the ATF better doing its job because they're the ones who license these gun dealers. And part of it is us not waiting for the ATF to do that, finding out who they are ourselves through crime gun trace reports and other things that we're doing. And like you said, name and shame them.
Talking to Dan Gross, president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Let me open the phone lines and invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation. In fact, we invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Join the conversation with any questions or comments you might have by calling in at 866-733-6786. Again, that toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or simply go to our website and post questions or comments you might have there. That website is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. We welcome your involvement, and please feel free to join us now again by phone or by email or by going to our website. And you're also talking about, enhancing a national conversation. And a lot of that seems to have stemmed from the notion that the industry has put forward that if you got a gun in the home, you're protecting yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is an argument that's just gone on since time immemorial. You know, I mean, a lot of people will say, well, maybe others aren't responsible with guns. And they worry about their children getting a gun or somebody else, a stranger, breaking in and getting a gun. But I'm good with firearms and I want to protect my home, my castle, and so forth. But I don't want to get into that debate. What I want to get in here is just the public health risk that we're talking about with guns, which is really real and palpable.
Yeah. And perhaps our greatest opportunity to prevent gun deaths in this country. 10 years ago, 42% of the American public believed incorrectly that a gun makes the home safer. You know, this isn't a conversation about whether there's any positive use for guns. This is purely about the equation, does having a gun in your home make your home
safer?
That
was a Gallup poll in 2000.
Yeah,
you're talking
yeah,
about.
And 42%. Now, that number, the most recent poll shows that number is 63%. So almost two-thirds of the American public believes incorrectly that myth put forward by the gun industry, whose goal is only to sell more guns without any concern whose hands those guns wind up in. It is.
And forgive me, 41% of those are Democrats. I saw those figures.
Yeah, yeah. And it is their Marlboro Man. That is their insight, as fewer people are hunting, to convince all of us that we need guns to protect ourselves. And what winds up happening every day in this country, 8 children are shot unintentionally, just by accident. Every year, 900 children and teens take their own lives. Almost all of those tragedies are with guns from the home, parents' guns. The parents who bring those guns into their home, they have more in common with me than not. They think they're actually keeping their family safer. The gun industry doesn't want us to talk about the risks associated with that. So that's why when you say, Michael, that, you know, we're talking about starting a new national conversation, that's the conversation that we need to start. It needs to be an honest conversation, not demonizing guns, but just, you know, to the extent that we talk about car safety without demonizing cars, or swimming pool safety without demonizing swimming pools. We need to bring together the media industry, the advertising industry, the organizational partners like that we've had, like the American Academy of Pediatrics, turn it into the modern day secondhand smoke, friends don't let friends drive drunk campaign to really address what is one of the greatest public health risks we have in our country.
And we also have, just since we're dealing with statistics here, you know, the Gallup polls that you mentioned and the number of those who have bought what you call the myth and so forth, minorities and women are buying guns at a higher rate than ever before with the Trump presidency. Yeah. And those numbers are rising in sales, heavily in Democratic states, in fact. And you get into some serious questions here, again, about what you can do to curb this appetite for guns and what you can do, really, to ensure safety without stepping over the boundaries of what gun owners feel are their rights to own a gun under the Second Amendment. These are big questions, and they're questions we used to call talk show 101, you know, just arguing about gun control. Mm. But we're talking really about sensible kinds of things here in terms of background checks, which most Americans want, and in terms of maybe the conversation. You also, in the Brady campaign, have brought in the rhetoric, the language of, not only President Trump, for example, on a couple of occasions we talk about, you know, I could shoot somebody on Fifth. Now, people would say this is just hyperbole. Nobody takes him seriously. He's joking about that. I could shoot somebody and people wouldn't care on Fifth Avenue. But you see this as invidious?
I do. And I do to the extent that it perpetuates these false and extremely dangerous, even deadly notions about guns, that, you know, this utopia is everybody walking around with guns to protect themselves. That's the common denominator of all of that all of that rhetoric that we take exception to, it flies in the face. It's the conversation that the gun industry wants us to have because it perpetuates a debate about whether the answer is all of us walking around with guns. They don't care if everyone winds up agreeing with them. They just care that this is perceived as being a controversial debate. What's important for us at this organization, especially as it relates to the conversation about the Second Amendment and accusations that, the people are gun grabbers, is to make it super clear at every turn that we are about one thing and one thing only as it pertains to preventing gun violence and gun deaths, which is keeping guns out of the hands of the people we all agree shouldn't have them. If you drew a Venn diagram and one circle was people who love guns and the other circle was people who hate guns, there is tremendous overlap, 93% as it relates to background checks, tremendous overlap in terms of the belief that a convicted violent criminal, a domestic abuser, somebody who's dangerously mentally ill, an unsupervised child in the home shouldn't have those guns. So that's where we try to ground the whole conversation.
Well, Dan Gross is here from the Brady Campaign, and they really want to keep guns from going into the wrong hands. Let's hear from our listeners. Bruce, we begin with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. So I completely agree with these background checks that we have. But what I don't agree with is the fact that we have to do paperwork for law-abiding citizens and gun owners for every single weapon we decide to purchase. Now, with that being said, we do have these laws that are in place, but what are we doing to be able to train, the average person who decides, who has a clean background but no experience in any firearm use whatsoever? What are we able to do, aside from paying it for out of pocket ourselves, to get the proper training to be able to handle these firearms in any situation, whether it be for sport, whether it be for home protection, or whether it be, just to have it as collectors?
All right, we get the question. Dan Gross.
Yeah, Bruce, thanks for the question. Training is a very important thing. It's important that it be done objectively in light of the facts. When training is traced back to the gun lobby and the gun industry, it winds up actually perpetuating some of those false stereotypes and myths, like you need a gun to protect your home, and that is, and leaving a gun accessible in some way is the best way to do that. So we're all for training. It's another very important part of the solution. The more educated a gun owner and user is about the risks associated with it and the safety measures that should be taken, the better off we're all going to be. There are those, not my organization, but others that are advocating for the kind of licensing that you see with automobiles. That requires a certain level of training and competency demonstrated before you can get a gun. So that's almost like, background checks on steroids.
Let me thank you for the call, Bruce. I want to get as many of you on here as I can. We'll go next to Rock Hill, South Carolina. Andy, you're on the air with us.
Yes, sir. I was wanting some clarification on what you mentioned about there being no background checks on internet gun sales. Having bought multiple guns over the internet, I'm guessing you're only talking about private sales over the internet, because anytime I've bought a gun, the gun gets shipped to a licensed dealer. I go pick it up. I fill out the paperwork. I get the background check done, and then I get my gun.
Yep.
But the part about that there's no background checks on the internet seems to very often get left out of these discussions. That the clarification there is there's no background check on private sales, which is the same for any private sale, which I have problems with, but.
I think Andy's point, your point is well taken. If you have a reputable gun dealer you're dealing with on the internet, of course you're going to have to go through the background checks, but there are too many of those private sales that simply don't obviate that.
Yeah, and I do not want to promote these sites, so I'm not going to name the biggest one that will sell guns with that private sale loophole, but I can tell you that there is, as an example, the site that I'm thinking of, where if you go on that site and you just click a little box, seems innocuous, that you only want to look at guns that are for sale as a private sale, you have the opportunity to buy nationally tens of thousands of guns. There have been estimates as high as 70,000 guns. I actually sat down with Senator Marco Rubio recently, where he had a staffer bring out his tablet. There was a photographer there. We have the photo on our website and on our Facebook page at the Brady Campaign, where I showed him exactly that with that website, and we clicked private sale. We looked for guns that were for sale in the area of Miami, and there were I think it was 1,700 handguns available for private sale without background checks, sometimes advertised that way, you know, no background check required, as if it was a product feature. So point well taken, but I do want to make it clear that that does not diminish whatsoever the fact that this is a huge problem.
And let me thank Andy for his call and go right to another caller, Mike in Connecticut. Join us.
Yes, thank you for your time. I do have a problem with some of your statistics. You said 90% of the problem guns come from 5% of the bad apples, but you're throwing the rest of the law-abiding citizens and even those who have had a classification of a felony by, you know, white-collar crime, violent or whatever, are deemed not to be able to buy guns anymore. When you served your time, when you've done your sentence, you know, those people are part of what the gun lobby is trying to, you know, sway the other way. When you already have the bad apples identified, and like you just said, 1,500 guns available in the Miami area from private sales, so you're not going to stop. I agree with the background checks, and I think the gun shows they should voluntarily do it. But you know, whenever this comes up in the media, it just turns. I'm ex-military. I'm a licensed gun owner. My wife and I, we live in Florida. We've shot rattlesnakes and we've shot coyotes that have attacked our horses in Florida. So when somebody in a city tells me that I shouldn't own a gun when I live out in the country, it just turns my goat. And, you know, I'm all for people not getting injured or killed, you know, senselessly. That's just absolutely, you know, a requirement. But we have 250,000 people a year die from malpractice. We have 34 to 43,000 people die on our highways in automobile accidents, and the rate is going up because of these cell phones and inattentive.
I understand what you're saying, though, and let me hear what Dan Gross has to say, because we're getting some pushback here along similar lines. Listener writes, how would expanded background checks have prevented the Sandy Hook massacre? If Mr. Gross aware that the Orlando killer passed background checks as a gun owner, a licensed gun carrier, and an armed security guard? Two-thirds of so-called gun deaths are suicides, mostly men over 65. How would background checks save their lives?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, from the caller, definitely appreciate the support around bad apple gun dealers. And the thing I would point out there is 86% of gun dealers in this country sell zero crime guns every year because they're very responsible and follow reasonable precautions. And we have absolutely no problem with them. As it relates to background checks, sorry to hear that you're not there. I'm not exactly clear why, but we're pleased to engage anybody in a conversation about how this has nothing to do with taking the rights away from any rights away from law-abiding citizens, but only to keep guns out of the hands of the people that we all agree shouldn't have them. Michael, in terms of the other pushback that we're getting, these are common themes you hear a lot from the very, very small minority of the American public. Actually, only 6%, according to some polls, that disagrees with background checks.
Well, you're getting also some disagreement on your statistics. Let me just throw that at the mix here, because Ira writes, this gun topic gets an F for phony. I don't know how he spells phony, but and a G for gossip. Where are the California facts? The discussion does not apply to California. California is making felons out of law-abiding citizens. How effective has Brady been? Statistics.
Yeah, I mean, there are, and I invite you to go to our website. California has tremendous laws that have made California much safer. This is a national show, and we're talking about a national problem. Once we identify who the bad apple gun dealers are, who are responsible for supplying the guns that are resulting in crime in the streets, you know, right here of Oakland, for example, you know, we will have something very tangible that we can do about the remaining gun violence that happens here in California. I just want to make clear kind of what's happening here, which is often what happens. You kind of get these questions about the statistics, which never prove to be never prove to be well founded. You get the desire to link our solutions that I can clearly, each one of them, tell you how they're going to keep guns out of dangerous hands and help us achieve our goal to cut gun deaths in half by 2025. People will put the onus on us, will tell me how that would have prevented an individual mass tragedy. I can tell you background checks would not have stopped the tragedy in Sandy Hook. What could have stopped it, though, is what I was talking about in terms of an understanding of the risks of guns in the home. If this woman knew that it was how unsafe it was to have a gun in an arsenal in her home and have a mentally unstable young man have access to that arsenal. So this is not a – there's no single solution. This is a big problem. We have come up with three things that we know will have a major impact on what the goal we all share of making this a safe for country by keeping guns out of the wrong hands.
We've got a little time left. I want to get Roger on here. He has a different perspective. Roger, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I first want to thank your guest for all of his efforts. But I wanted to say that with all due respect, I don't think his organization is going far enough. I think that the narrative in this country has been hijacked around this idea that we don't put the Second Amendment in context anymore, right? And that somehow it gives people unfettered rights to own a weapon and so on and so forth. And I know my view, maybe even in California, is a radical one. But what I would like to see happen is that no one other than law enforcement or the military should have access to a gun, period. And so I guess my question to the guest is, do you feel that it's a responsibility of your organization to try to talk about the limits of the Second Amendment, to educate the public as to how, at least in my view, some of these arguments about the Second Amendment are specious and taken out of context?
Roger, we're coming up on the music here. It means we're coming to the end of this segment. Let me get a quick response from you, Dan Gross.
I don't look at that as the central charge of our organization. I appreciate that perspective. But, you know, our bottom line is saving lives, preventing gun deaths. We can get there by keeping guns out of the hands of the people we all agree shouldn't have them and people that everybody agrees shouldn't be protected by the Second Amendment. So we prefer to focus on what we can do to make
this a safer
country.
Want to give out your website before we say goodbye.
BradyCampaign.org, or look us up on Facebook as well.
Dan Gross, thank you for being with us.
Pleasure, Michael.
Dan Gross again is president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Violence, Gun Violence. And in the next hour, we're going to talk to award-winning author Yi-Yin Lee, who has written a memoir. She's a novelist, but she's got a memoir out there. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.